back for you. So now, I want you to take these books and bear their weight. I'm not going to do that. Well, that's unfortunate, because you're not getting out of this room until you do what I tell you to do. Fine. I'm probably going to pee my pants then. There's a bucket in the closet if you need to relieve yourself. When I first moved in here, I noticed that blue bucket in the corner of the closet. I just left it there, never giving it a second thought. I look over at the closet, and it's still sitting there. My bladder spasms, and I cross my legs. Andrew, I mean it. I really have to go to the bathroom. I just told you what you can do. He isn't giving in. I don't understand what's going on here. Nina was always the crazy one. Andrew was the one who was reasonable, who saved me when Nina was accusing me of stealing her clothes. Are they both crazy? Are they both in on this? Fine. Let's just get this over with. I sit down on the ground and pick up one of the books so he can hear it. All right, I've got the books on top of me. Can you let me out now? You don't have the books on top of you. Yes, I do. Don't lie. I let out a huff of exasperation. How do you know whether I'm lying or not? Because I can see you. My spine turns to liquid. He can see me? My gaze darts from wall to wall, searching for a camera. How long has he been watching me? Has he been spying on me the entire time I've been here? You're not going to find it, he says. It's well hidden. And don't worry, I haven't been watching you all along. Only since a few weeks ago. I scramble to my feet. What the hell is your problem? You need to let me out right now. Here's the thing, Andrew says calmly. I don't think you're in any position to be making demands. I lunge at the door. I pound my fists against the wood, hard enough to make my hands red and sore. I swear to God, you better let me out of here. This isn't funny. Hey! Hey! Andrew's calm voice interrupts my pounding. Settle down. Look, I'm going to let you out. I promise. I let my arms drop to my sides. My fists are throbbing. Thank you. Just not yet. Heat rises in my cheeks. Andrew. I told you what you need to do to get out, he says. This is an extremely fair punishment for what you did. I press my lips together, too angry to even respond. Why don't I give you a little while to think about it, Millie? I'll come back later. I swear to God, I still believe he's got to be joking until his footsteps disappear down the hallway. Chapter 52. Millie. It's been an hour since Andrew was here. I used the bucket. I don't want to talk about it. But it got to a point where if I didn't use the bucket, I was going to have pee running down my legs. It was an interesting experience, to say the least. After I got that need taken care of, my stomach started rumbling. I checked the mini-fridge, where I usually keep a couple of snacks like yogurt. But somehow, it had been emptied in the last few days. The only thing left in there was three of those mini-bottles of water. I chugged the contents of two of the bottles, although immediately after, I regretted it. What if he leaves me here for several more hours? Or days? I might need that water. I throw on my jeans and a fresh t-shirt. Then I examined the pile of books on the floor. Andrew said he wanted me to keep those books resting on my belly for 3 hours, and then he would let me out of the room. I don't quite understand the purpose of this ridiculous game, but maybe I should just do it. Then he'll let me out, and I can get the hell out of here forever. I stretch out on the uncarpeted floor. It's the beginning of summer, which means the attic is unbearably stuffy, but the floor is still cool. I rest my head against the ground and pick up the book on prisons. It's a thick textbook that has got to weigh several pounds. I lower it onto my belly. It's pressure, but not exactly uncomfortable. If I had done this before my trip to the bucket, I would probably have peed my pants by now. But this isn't so bad. Then I pick up the second book. This is the one on torture. I suppose the title of this textbook isn't entirely a coincidence. Or maybe it is. Who knows? I lower the second book onto my belly. This time, the pressure becomes more uncomfortable. The books are heavy. And the protuberance of my scapula and my tailbone bite into the hard, uncarpeted floor. This isn't enjoyable, but it's tolerable. But he wanted all three books. I pick up the final book, the phone book. This one is not only heavy, but bulky. It's hard to even lift it with two other books already on top of me. It takes a couple of tries, but I manage to get the phone book balanced on my abdomen. The weight of all three books almost takes my breath away. Two was doable, but three is awful. This is very, very uncomfortable. It's hard to take a deep breath, and the edge of the bottom book bites into my ribcage. No, I can't do it. I can't. I shove all three books off me. My shoulders heave as I suck in air. He can't expect me to keep all three books balanced on me for hours. Can he? I get back on my feet and immediately start pacing the room. I don't know what game Andrew is playing here, but I'm not going to do this. He's going to let me out of here, or else I'm going to find a way out myself. There must be a way out of this room. This isn't prison. Maybe there's a way I can unscrew the door hinges, or the screws on the doorknob. Andrew has a toolkit downstairs stashed in the garage, and I would give anything to get my hands on that right now. But I've got lots of stuff in my dresser drawers. Maybe there's something I can use as a makeshift screwdriver. Millie? It's Andrew's voice again. I abandon my search for tools and rush over to the door. I put the books on top of me. Please let me out. I told you, 3 hours. You only did it for about a minute. I have had enough of this shit. Let me out now. Or else what? He laughs. I told you what you need to do. I'm not doing it. Fine. Then you can stay locked in there. I shake my head. So you'll let me die in here? You're not going to die. When the water runs out, you'll realize what you have to do. This time, I can barely hear his footsteps retreating over the sound of my own screams. I have had the three books on my abdomen for 2 hours and 50 minutes. Andrew was right. After the third water bottle had been drained, my desperation to leave the room heightened considerably. When fantasies of waterfalls started dancing before my eyes, I knew I had to complete the task he wanted. Of course, there's no guarantee he'll let me out if I do it, but I hope he will. The books are really, really uncomfortable. I'm not going to lie. There are moments when I feel like I can't stand it another second, that the weight is going to literally crush my pelvis, but then I take a breath, best I can with these stupid books on top of me, and I hang in there. It's almost over. And when I get out of here, at the 3 hour mark, I shove the books off of my belly. It's a massive relief, but when I try to sit up, my abdomen aches badly enough to bring tears to my eyes. There are going to be bruises left behind. Still, I push forward and pound on the door. I did it! I yell. I'm done! Let me out of here! But of course, he doesn't come. He might be able to see me, but I have no idea where he is. Is he in the house? At work? He could be anywhere. He knows where I am, but I don't have the same privilege. That bastard. It's an hour later when I hear footsteps outside my door. I want to cry with relief. I've never been claustrophobic before, but this experience has changed me. I'm not sure if I'll be able to ride in elevators after this. Millie? I did it, you asshole. I spit at the door. Now let me out. His lackadaisical tone makes me want to wrap my fingers around his neck and squeeze.
I'm afraid I can't do that.
But you promised. You said if I kept the books on my belly for 3 hours, you would let me out.
Right. But here's the thing. You pushed them off a minute too early. So I'm afraid you'll have to start over.
My eyes fly open. If there were a moment when I would morph into the Incredible Hulk and rip the door right off by the hinges, that would be this moment. You've got to be kidding me.
I'm so sorry, but these are the rules.
But, I sputter, I don't have any water left.
That's a shame, he sighs. Next time, you'll have to learn to conserve your water.
Next time? I kick the door. Are you out of your mind? There's not going to be a next time.
Actually, I think there will be, he says thoughtfully.
You're on parole, right? If you were to take something from our house, and I'm sure Nina would back me up on that,
where do you think you would end up?
One offense and you're right back in jail. Whereas you only have to stay in this room for a day or two every once in a while if you misbehave. I think this is a much better deal, don't you?
Okay. This would be the moment I would turn into the Incredible Hulk.
So, he says, I would get back to work, because soon you're going to get pretty thirsty. This time, I wait 3 hours and 10 minutes, because I don't want there to be any chance that Andrew will claim that I need to do it a third time. That will kill me. My belly feels like somebody has been punching me in the abdomen for the last several hours. It hurts so much. At first, I can't even sit up. I have to roll onto my side and push myself into a sitting position using my arms. And my head aches from lack of water. I have to crawl over to the cot and pull myself onto it. I sit there and wait for Andrew to come. It's another half an hour before his voice reappears behind the door.
Millie?
I did it, I say, although my own voice is barely a whisper. I can't even stand up.
I saw you.
There's a patronizing edge to his voice.
Excellent job.
And then I hear the most beautiful sound I've ever heard. It's the sound of the door unlocking. It's even better than when I got out of prison. Andrew comes into the bedroom, clutching a glass of water. He hands it over to me, and for a moment, it hits me that he could have slipped some sort of drugs into the water. But I don't even care. I gulp it down. All of it. He sits down beside me on the cot. He rests a hand on the small of my back, and I cringe.
How are you doing?
My belly hurts. He tilts his head.
I'm sorry.
Are you?
You do have to be taught a lesson when you do something wrong. It's the only way you'll learn.
His lips twitch.
If you had done it right the first time, I wouldn't have had to ask you to do it again.
I look up and study his handsome features.
How could I have fallen in love with this man?
He seemed nice and normal and wonderful. I hadn't even the slightest clue what a monster he is. His goal isn't to marry me. It's to make me his prisoner.
How could you tell exactly how long I was doing it? I say.
You can't possibly be able to see that well.
On the contrary.
He pulls his phone out of his pocket and brings up an app. A crisp color image of my room fills the screen. I can see the two of us sitting together on the bed in incredible resolution. The image of myself shows me looking pale and hunched over, with stringy hair.
Isn't that a great image? Like a movie.
That bastard. He watched me suffer in here for the entire day, and he has every intention of doing this to me again. Except next time, it will be longer.
and God knows what he'll make me do next time. I've already been a prisoner once. I won't let it happen again. No way. So I reach into the pocket of my jeans, and I pull out the bottle of pepper spray I found in the bucket. Chapter 53. Nina. When I hired that private investigator to dig into Wilhelmina Calloway's past, I found some very interesting information. I had assumed Millie went to jail for some sort of drug crime or maybe theft. But no. Millie Calloway went to jail for something entirely different. She was in prison for murder. She was only 16 years old at the time of her arrest and was in prison by 17, so it took some effort for the detective to get all the information. Millie was in boarding school. No, not just a boarding school. A school specifically for teenagers with disciplinary problems. One night, Millie and one of her girlfriends snuck out to a party at the boys' dormitory. Millie was passing by a bedroom and heard her friends screaming for help behind the door. She entered the dark room and found one of their classmates, a 200-pound football player, forcing himself on her friend. So, Millie picked up a paperweight from on top of a desk and bashed the boy in the head with it. Multiple times. The boy was dead before he even got to the hospital. The detective had photographs. Millie's attorney argued that she had been trying to defend her friend who was being assaulted. But if you look at those photographs, it would be hard to argue she hadn't meant to kill him. His skull was visibly crushed. She eventually pleaded guilty to lesser manslaughter charges, given her age and the circumstances. The family of the boy was in agreement. They wanted vengeance for their son's death, but they also didn't want him branded a rapist all over the internet. Millie took the deal because there were other incidents, things that would have come to light if she had gone to trial. In grade school, she was expelled when she got into a fight with a little boy in her class who was calling her names. She shoved him off the monkey bars and broke his arm. In middle school, she slashed the tires of her math teacher's car when he gave her a failing grade. Soon after that, she was sent to boarding school. And then, even after her prison sentence, the incidents continued. Millie wasn't laid off from her waitressing job. She was fired after she smashed her fist into the nose of one of her co-workers. Millie seems like a sweet girl. That's what Andrew sees when he looks at her. He won't dig into her past the way I did. He doesn't know what she's capable of. And here's the truth. I initially wanted to hire a maid in hopes that she would become my replacement. That if Andrew fell in love with another woman, he would finally let me go. But that's not why I hired Millie. That's not why I gave her a copy of the key to the room. And that's not why I left a bottle of pepper spray and the blue bucket in the closet. I hired her to kill him. She just doesn't know it. Chapter 54. Millie. Andrew screams when the pepper spray gets him in the eyes. The nozzle is about 3 inches away from his eyes, so he gets a good dose of it. And then I press it a second time for good measure. While I do it, I turn my own head away and close my eyes. The last thing I need is to get pepper spray in my eyes, although it's hard not to get a little bit of residue. When I look up again, he's clawing at his face, which has turned bright red. His phone has fallen from his hands onto the floor, and I scoop it up, being very careful not to touch anything else. Everything has to go exactly right in the next 20 seconds. I've spent over 6 hours planning this while 3 books were resting on my belly. My legs are wobbly when I stand up, but they work. Andrew is still writhing on the cot, and before he can get his sight back, I slip out of the room and close the door behind me. Then I take the key Nina gave me and fit it into the lock. I turn the key and pocket it. Then I take a step back. Millie! Andrew screams on the other side of the door.
What the hell?
I look down at the screen of his phone. My fingers are shaking, but I'm able to get into settings. And I shut off the lock screen setting before the phone locks automatically, so the phone won't require a password anymore.
Millie!
I take another step back, as if he could reach through the door and grab me. But he can't. I'm safe on the other side of the door.
Millie!
His voice is a low growl now.
Let me out of here right now!
My heart is beating fast in my chest. It's the same way I felt when I walked into that bedroom all those years ago and found Kelsey screaming at that asshole football player,
"Get off of me!"
And Duncan was laughing drunkenly. I stood there for a second, my body paralyzed as my chest filled with rage. He was so much bigger than either one of us. It wasn't like I could pull him off of her. The room was dark, and I felt around on the desk until my hands made contact with the paperweight, and I will never forget that day. How good it felt to smash the paperweight against that bastard's skull until he became still. It was almost worth all those years in prison. After all, who knows how many other girls I saved from him.
I'll let you out, I say. Just not yet.
You've got to be kidding me.
The outrage in his voice is palpable.
This is my house. You can't keep me hostage here. And you're a criminal. All I have to do is call the police, and you're right back in jail.
Right, I say. But how can you call the police when I have your phone?
I look down at the screen of his phone. I can see him standing there in vivid color. I can even see how red his face is from the pepper spray and the tears on his cheeks. He checks his pockets, then scans the floor with his swollen eyes.
Millie,
he says in a slow, controlled voice,
I want my phone back.
I let out a hoarse laugh.
I'm sure you do.
Millie, give me my phone back right now.
I don't think you're in any position to be making demands.
Millie.
Just a moment. I slip his phone into my pocket. I'm going to grab a bite to eat. I'll be back real soon.
Millie!
He's still calling my name as I walk down the hall and go downstairs. I ignore him. There's nothing he can do when he's stuck in that room, and I have to figure out my next move. The first thing I do is exactly what I said I was going to do. I go to the kitchen, where I drink two heaping glasses of water. Then I make myself a bologna sandwich. No, not abalone. Bologna. With lots of mayonnaise and white bread. After I've got some food in my belly, I feel a lot better. I can finally think straight. I pick up Andrew's phone. He is still in the attic room, pacing back and forth, like a caged animal. If I were to let him out, I can't even imagine what he would do to me. The thought of it makes a cold sweat break out at the back of my neck. While I'm watching him, a text message pops up on his phone from Mom.
Are you going to serve Nina with divorce papers?
I scroll through some of the previous messages. Andrew has told his mother all about his falling out with Nina. I've got to answer her, because if he doesn't, she might come over here, and then I'm screwed. Nobody can suspect something has happened to Andrew.
Yes, just speaking with my lawyer right now.
The reply from Andrew's mother comes back almost instantly.
Good. I never liked her. And I always did the best I could with Cecilia. But Nina was extremely lax on discipline, and the little girl became quite a brat.
I get a jab of sympathy in my chest for Nina and Cecilia. It's bad enough that Andrew's mother never liked Nina, but to speak that way of her own grandchild? And I wonder what Andrew's mother had in mind for discipline. If it's anything like Andy's idea of punishment, I'm glad Nina never went through with it. My hands are trembling as I type my reply. Looks like you were right about Nina. Now I have to deal with that asshole. I shove his phone back in my pocket. Then I climb the stairs to the second floor, then all the way up to the attic. When I get to the top floor, the footsteps in the attic room go silent. He must have heard me. "Millie," he says.
"I'm here," I say stiffly.
He clears his throat.
"You made your point about the room. I'm sorry about what I did."
"Are you?"
"Yes. I realize now I was wrong."
"I see. So you're sorry?"
He clears his throat.
"Yes."
"Say it."
He is silent for a bit.
"Say what?"
"Say you're sorry that you did a terrible thing to me." I watch his expression on the screen. He doesn't want to tell me he's sorry, because he's not. All he's sorry for is that he gave me the chance to get the better of him.
"I'm so sorry," he finally says. "I was absolutely wrong. I did an awful thing to you, and I will never do it again."
He pauses.
"Will you let me out now?"
"Yes, I will."
"Thank you."
"Just not yet." He inhales sharply.
"Millie,
I'm going to let you out." My calm voice belies the pounding in my chest. "But before I do, you have to be punished for what you did to me."
"Don't play this game," he growls. "You don't have the stomach for it."
He wouldn't talk to me that way if he knew I beat a man to death with a paperweight. He has no idea. But I'm betting that Nina knows. "I want you to lie down on the floor and put those three books on top of you."
"Come on, this is ridiculous."
"I'm not letting you out of this room until you do it." Andrew lifts his eyes to look into the camera. I always thought he had nice eyes, but there's venom in them as he stares at me. Not at me, I remind myself. He's looking at the camera.
"Fine, I'll humor you."
He lies down on the floor. One by one, he picks up each book and stacks them on his abdomen, the same way I did only hours earlier. But he's bigger and stronger than I am, and he only looks mildly uncomfortable with those books on top of him, even when all three are stacked on him.
"Happy?"
he calls out. "Lower," I say.
"What?"
"Move the books lower."
"I don't know what you—"
I press my forehead against the door as I speak. "You know exactly what I mean." Even through the door, I can hear the sharp inhale of his breath.
"Millie, I can't—"
"If you want to get out of that room, you're going to do it." I stare down at the screen of his phone, watching him. He pushes the books down his chest so they are squarely on top of his genitals. He didn't look very uncomfortable before, but that has changed now. His face is frozen in a grimace.
"Jesus Christ," he gasps.
"Good," I say. "Now stay that way for 3 hours."
Chapter 55. Millie.
As I sit on the couch watching television and waiting for the 3 hours to be up, I think about Nina. All along, I believed she was the crazy one. Now I don't know what to think. She must have left me the pepper spray in that room. She suspected what he was going to do to me, which makes me think he's done it to her. Maybe many times before. Was Nina ever really jealous? Or was it all just an act? I'm still not entirely sure. Part of me wants to call her and find out, but I suspect that wouldn't be a good idea. After all, Kelsey never spoke to me again after I killed Duncan. I don't understand why, because I killed him for her. He was forcing himself on her. But the next time I saw my former best friend, she looked at me with disgust. Nobody ever understood. After I got in trouble for slashing Mr. Kavanaugh's tires, I tried to explain to my mother how he had told me I was going to fail math class unless I let him feel me up. She didn't believe me. Nobody believed me. She shipped me off to boarding school because I kept getting in trouble. That didn't work out so well. After the incident at the boarding school, they wiped their hands of me for good. And then, when I finally got a decent job after getting out of prison, I had to deal with that bartender Kyle, who kept grabbing my ass every chance he got. So one day, I spun around and slammed my fist into his nose. He only didn't press charges because he was so embarrassed that he got beat up by a girl. But they told me not to come back. And soon after that, I was living in my car. The only person I can trust is myself. I yawn and shut off the television. It's been just over 3 hours, and Andrew hasn't budged from the floor. He's followed all the rules, even though he must be in agony. I take my time walking up the steps to the top floor. Just as I get there, he shoves the book off his genitals. For a moment, he just lies there, doubled over. "Andrew," I say.
"What?
How are you feeling?"
"How do you think I'm feeling?" he hisses. "Let me out of here, you bitch."
He doesn't seem nearly as calm and smug as he was last time I was here. Good. I lean against the door, watching his face on my screen. I really don't appreciate swearing. I would have thought since you're counting on me to help you, you could be a little nicer.
"Let me out!"
He sits up on the floor, cradling his head in his hands.
"I swear to God, Millie, if you don't let me out right now, I'm going to kill you."
He says it so casually. "I'm going to kill you." I stare at the screen of my phone, wondering how many other women have been in this room. I wonder if any of them have died in this room. It seems entirely possible. "Relax," I say. "I'm going to let you out."
"Good."
"Just not yet."
"Millie," he growls, "I did exactly what you said. 3 hours.
3 hours? I raise my eyebrows, even though he can't see them. "I'm sorry if you heard 3 hours. I actually said 5 hours. So I'm afraid you're going to have to start over."
"Five?"
I love that the full color display allows me to see the way his face blanches.
"I can't do that. I can't do 5 more hours. Come on! You've got to let me out of here. This game is over."
"This isn't a negotiation, Andrew," I say patiently. "If you want to get out of this room, you're going to keep those books on your junk for the next 5 hours. The choice is yours."
"Millie. Millie."
His breathing is jagged.
"Look, there is always room to negotiate. What do you want? I'll give you money. I'll give you $1 million right now if you let me out of this room. How about that?"
"No."
$2 million.
It's easy for him to offer me money he has no intention of ever giving me. "I'm afraid not. I'm going to go to bed now, but maybe in the morning I'll see you again."
"Millie, be reasonable," his voice breaks. "At least I left you with some water. Can't I have some water?"
"I'm afraid not," I say. "Maybe next time you should leave the girl you lock in the room with more water, so some will be left for you." With those words, I walk down the hallway as he screams my name. As soon as I get down to the bedroom, I Google, "How long can a person live without water?"
Chapter 56. Nina. When I greet Cecilia at her camp, it's the happiest I've seen her look in a while. She's with some new friends she's made, her round face shining. She's got a sunburn on her shoulders and cheeks, and there's a scrape on her elbow with the band-aid half hanging off. Instead of one of those horrible, frilly dresses Andy always insists on, she's wearing a comfy pair of shorts and a t-shirt. I'll be happy if she never wears a dress again.
Hi, Mom.
She bounces over to me, her ponytail swinging behind her. Suzanne said that when her youngest started calling her Mom instead of Mommy, it was a dagger in her heart. But I was happy Cece was growing up, because it meant that soon she'd be old enough that he wouldn't have any power over her. Over us.
You're early.
Yes. The top of her head comes up to my shoulder now. Did she grow during the time she was here? She wraps her skinny arms around me, resting her head against my shoulder.
Where are we going now?
I smile. When Cece was packing her things for camp, I told her to pack a bunch of extra clothes because I wasn't sure if we would be coming straight home. That maybe we would be going somewhere else after this. So I've still got some of her bags in the trunk of my car. I wasn't sure if it would happen. I didn't know that it would all go according to plan. Every time I think about it, my eyes fill with tears. We're free. Where would you like to go? I ask. She tilts up her head.
Disneyland.
We could go to California. I would love to put 3,000 miles between me and Andrew Winchester. Just in case he somehow gets it in his head that we should be together again. Just in case Millie doesn't do what I'm hoping she's going to do. Let's do it, I say. Cece's face lights up, and she starts jumping up and down. She still has that childlike happiness. The ability to live in the moment. He hasn't completely stolen it from her. Not yet, anyway. Then she stops jumping as her face gets serious.
What about Dad?
He's not coming. The relief on her face mirrors my own. He never laid a finger on her as far as I know, and I watched carefully. If I had seen even the tiniest suspicious bruise on my child, I would have told Enzo to go ahead and kill him. But I never saw anything. Still, she knew some of her own transgressions resulted in me being punished. She's a smart girl. Of course, the fact that she always had to be so perfect around her father meant that she rebounded when he wasn't around. She doesn't really trust any adults except me, and she can sometimes be difficult. She's been called a brat before, but it's not her fault. My daughter has a good heart. Cece runs into her cabin to grab her bags. I start to follow her, but then my phone buzzes in my purse. I rifle through the messy contents of my bag until I find my phone. It's Enzo. I debate if I should answer. Enzo helped save my life, and I can't argue he didn't give me an unforgettable night. But I'm ready to leave that part of my life behind. I don't know what he's calling about, and I'm not sure I want to know. Then again, I owe him at least to pick up the phone. Hello? I lower my voice a few notches. What's going on? Enzo's tone is low and serious. We need to talk, Nina. In my lifetime, those four words have never led to anything good. What is it? I say. You need to come back here. You need to help Millie. I snort. Out of the question.
Out of the question.
I've heard Enzo angry before, but never directed at me. This is a first.
Nina, she is in trouble. You put her in that situation.
Right, because she slept with my husband. Am I supposed to feel sorry for her?
You pushed her into it.
She didn't have to take the bait. Nobody twisted her arm. Anyway, she'll be fine. Andy never did anything to me for months. Not until after we got married. I sniff. I'll write her a letter after the divorce, okay? I'll warn her about him. Before she marries him. He's quiet for a few beats on the other line.
Millie hasn't left the house in 3 days.
My eyes dart up to Cecilia's cabin. She's still inside packing and probably gabbing with her new friends. I look around at the other parents arriving for pickup. I scurry off to the side, lowering my voice further.
What do you mean?
I was worried about her, so I put a red mark on the tire of her car. It's been 3 days, and the mark is still in the exact same spot. She hasn't gone anywhere in 3 days.
I let out a huff. Look, Enzo, that could mean anything. Maybe the two of them went on a trip together.
No, I've seen his car move.
I roll my eyes.
So maybe they're carpooling. Maybe she just doesn't feel like driving anywhere. The light is on in the attic.
I clear my throat, taking another step away from the other parents. How do you know that?
I went in the backyard.
After Andy fired you?
I had to check, okay? There is somebody up there.
I squeeze the phone so tightly my fingers start to tingle.
So what? The attic was her bedroom. Is it really such a big deal that she's up there?
I don't know.
You tell me.
A dizzy sensation comes over me. When I planned this whole thing out, back when I wanted Millie to be my replacement, and then later when I wanted her to kill that bastard, I never really thought it out. I left her the pepper spray, and I gave her the key to the room, and I thought she would be fine. But now I realize I may have made a huge mistake. I think of her trapped in the room in the attic, having to endure whatever torture Andy has come up with. The thought of it makes me sick.
What about you? I say. Can't you go in and check on her?
I rang the bell. No answer.
What about the key under the flower pot?
It wasn't there.
What about
Nina?
Enzo growls. Are you saying you want me to break into that house? Do you know what would happen to me if I got caught?
You have a key. You have every right to go in there.
I'll go with you, but I can't go alone.
But
this is all just excuses, he bursts out. I can't believe you would let her suffer the way you suffered.
I take one last look up at Cecilia's cabin. She's just coming out now, lugging her bags behind her.
Fine, I say. I'll come back.
But only on one condition.
Chapter 57. Millie. When I wake up in the guest bedroom the next morning, the first thing I do is reach for Andrew's phone. I bring up the app for the camera in the attic. Right away, the room jumps into focus. I stare at the screen, and my blood turns cold. The room is deathly still. Andrew isn't in there anymore. He's gotten out of the room. I clutch the blankets in my left hand. My eyes dart around the bedroom, searching for him, maybe lurking in the shadows. There's a sudden movement at the window, and I almost have a heart attack before I realize it's a bird.
Where is he? And how did he get out?
Is there some sort of fail-safe button that I didn't know about? A way for him to escape if he ever found himself in this situation? But it's hard to imagine. He kept those books on his groin for hours on end. Why would he have done that if he had been able to get out all along? Either way, if he's gotten out of the room, he's got to be pissed. I've got to get out of this house. Now. My eyes drop down to the phone. And then, something moves on the screen. I let out a slow breath. Andrew is in the room after all. He's under the covers on the cot. I just didn't see him because he was so still. I use the function to rewind the video of the room. I watch Andrew lying on the floor of the room, grimacing at the weight on top of him.
5 hours.
He did it for 5 hours. So if I am to hold up my end of the bargain, I have to let him out now. I take my time getting ready. I take a long, hot shower. The tension in my neck melts away as the warm water runs over my body. I know what I have to do next, and I'm ready. I put on a comfortable t-shirt and a pair of jeans. I gather my dirty blonde hair back into a ponytail and slide Andrew's phone into my pocket. Then I pick up something that I grabbed from the garage yesterday and hide it in my other pocket. I climb up the creaky steps to the attic. I've climbed up here enough times that I've noticed not every step creaks, only certain ones. The second step is very loud, for example, and the top step. When I get to the top, I rap on the door. I look down at his phone, at the color image of the room. He doesn't move from the bed. Worry prickles the base of my neck. Andrew hasn't had anything to drink in about 12 hours. He must be feeling pretty weak by now. I remember how I was feeling yesterday when I was starved for water. What if he's unconscious? What then? But then, Andrew stirs on the mattress. I watch as he struggles into a sitting position and rubs his eyes with the balls of his hands. "Andrew," I say, "I'm back." He lifts his eyes and looks directly at the camera. I shiver, imagining exactly what he would do to me if I opened this door. If I opened the door, he would drag me in there by my ponytail. He would make me do horrible things before he let me out. If he ever let me out. He rises unsteadily to his feet. He walks over to the door and collapses against it. I did it. Let me out. Yeah, right. So, here's the thing, I say. The video feed didn't come through from overnight. Frustrating, right? So I'm afraid you're going to have to...
I'm not doing it again!
His face is bright pink, and it isn't from the pepper spray.
You need to let me out right now, Millie. I'm not joking around.
I'm going to let you out. I pause. Just not yet. Andrew takes a step back, staring at the door. Then he takes another step back, and another. And then he starts running. He rams himself at the door so hard it shakes on its hinges. But it doesn't budge. Then he starts backing up again. Shit. Listen, I say, I'm going to let you out. There's just one other thing you need to do.
Fuck you. I don't believe you.
He rams himself at the door again. It shakes, but it doesn't splinter. The house is relatively new and well made. I wonder if he is capable of knocking the door down. Maybe at his best, when he's well hydrated. But not now. And it would be hard to knock it down from the inside because that's where the hinges are. He's breathing hard now. He leans against the door, trying to catch his breath. His face is even redder than it was before. I don't think he has it in him to break the door down.
What do you want me to do?
He manages. I pulled the object I grabbed from the garage out of my pocket. I found it in Andrew's toolkit. It's a pair of pliers. I slide it under the gap below the door. On the other side of the door, he reaches down and picks up the pliers. He turns them back and forth. He frowns.
I don't understand. What do you want me to do?
Well, I say, it was just so hard to tell exactly how long you had those books on top of you. This will be easier. A one-time deal.
I don't understand.
It's simple. If you want to get out of the room, all you have to do is pull out one of your teeth. I watch Andrew's face on the screen. His lips pull into a grimace, and he throws the pliers on the floor.
You're joking. There's no way. I'm not doing that.
I think, I say, that another few hours without water, and you might feel differently. He takes another few steps back again. He's summoning all his strength. He runs at the door and rams against it as hard as he can. Once again, it shakes but doesn't budge. I watch as he draws back a fist and slams it against the wooden door. Andrew howls with pain. Honestly, he would have been better off just pulling out a tooth. At the bar where I used to work, a guy got drunk and punched the wall, and he broke a bone in his hand. I wouldn't be surprised if Andrew has done the same.
Let me out! He screams at me. Let me out of this fucking room right now!
I'll let you out, You know what you have to do. He's cradling his right hand with his left. He falls to his knees, almost doubled over. I watch on the phone screen as he picks up the pliers with his left hand. I hold my breath as he brings them to his mouth. Is he going to do it? I can't stand this. I close my eyes, unable to watch. He howls with agony. It's the same sound Duncan made when I brought that paperweight down on his skull. My eyes fly open, and Andrew is still on the screen. He's still on his knees. I watch as he bows his head and bawls like a little baby. He's close to breaking point. He can't stand it. He's willing to rip his own teeth out of his mouth just to get out of this room. He has no idea this is just the beginning. Chapter 58. Nina.
Something has gone wrong. I feel it the second I pull up in front of Andrew's house. Something terrible has happened inside that house. I sense it with every fiber of my being. I agreed to return here on one condition. Enzo was to stay with Cece and protect her with his life. There was nobody else in the world I would trust with my daughter. I know a lot of women in this town, and every single one of them was taken in by my husband's charm. I wouldn't trust any of them not to hand her over to him. But that means I'm here alone. The last time I was here was a week ago, but it feels like an eternity. I park outside the gates, on the street behind Millie's car. I crouch down behind her vehicle and notice the red mark Enzo made on her tire. It's still there. Is it in the same place it was yesterday and the day before? I have no idea.
Nina, is that you?
It's Suzanne. I straighten up, backing away from Millie's car. She is standing on the sidewalk, tilting her head quizzically at me. The last time I saw her, she looked downright skeletal, but it seems like she's lost even more weight.
Is everything okay, Nina?
Suzanne asks. I plaster a smile on my lips. Yes, of course. Why wouldn't it be?
We were supposed to have lunch the other day and you never showed, so I popped over to check on you.
Right. My weekly lunches with Suzanne. If there's one thing I won't miss about this life, it's that. Sorry, I guess I forgot. Suzanne purses her lips. I'll never forget the way she nodded sympathetically at me while I confessed everything Andy had done to me, then turned around and ratted me out. She chose to believe him over me. You don't forget that sort of betrayal.
I heard a terrible rumor, she says. I heard you moved out, that you left Andy, or that he...
That he dumped me for the maid? I catch the expression on Suzanne's face, and I know I've hit the nail on the head. Everybody in town is talking about us. I'm afraid it isn't true. The rumor mill has it wrong yet again. I was just picking Cece up at her camp, that's all.
Oh.
There's a flash of disappointment on Suzanne's face. She was hoping for a bit of juicy gossip.
Well, I'm happy to hear that. I was worried about you.
Absolutely nothing to worry about. My cheeks are starting to hurt from smiling. Now, I've had a long trip, so if you'll excuse me. Suzanne follows me with her eyes as I head down the walkway to my front door. I'm sure she has a lot of questions whirling around her head. For example, if I went to pick up Cecilia at camp, where is she? And why didn't I park in the garage instead of on the street? But I don't have time to explain myself to this terrible woman. I have to figure out what happened with Millie and Andy. The first floor of my house is dark. Since the last time I was here, Andy told me to get out of his house. I start by ringing the doorbell instead of bounding inside. And then I wait for somebody to let me in. After 2 minutes, I'm still standing there. Finally, I take my key ring out of my purse. I've done this motion so many times before, grab the keys,
Find the copper one with the letter A etched on it. Fit it in the lock. The door to my former home swings open. Unsurprisingly, it's dark inside the house. I don't hear a sound.
Andy?
I call out. No answer. I walk over to the door to our garage. I push it open, and Andy's BMW is sitting there. Of course, that doesn't rule out the fact that Andy and Millie took a trip together. They could have taken a taxi to LaGuardia. That's what Andy usually does. I bet they decided to take a spontaneous vacation together. Except, in my heart, I know they didn't.
Andy!
I call out, louder this time.
Millie?
Nothing. I walk over to the stairwell. I peer up to the second floor, trying to detect any movement. I don't see anything. Yet it feels like someone is in here. I start to climb the stairs. My legs are shaking underneath me, and there is a real possibility they might give out. But I keep walking. I keep going until I get to the second floor.
Andy?
I swallow, a lump in my throat.
Please, if anyone is here, just answer me.
When I don't get a response, I start checking the rooms. The master bedroom, empty. The guest room, empty. Cece's room, empty. The theater, also empty. There's only one more place to look. The door to the stairwell of the attic is open. The lighting has always been horrible in that stairwell. I grip the banister and look up to the top of the stairs. Someone is out there, I'm sure of it. Millie must be locked in there. Andy must have done it to her. But where is Andy then? Why is his car here if he isn't? My legs barely support me as I climb the 14 steps to the attic landing. At the end of the hallway is the room where I spent so many horrible days throughout my marriage. There's a light on in the room. It's coming from under the door. Don't worry, Millie, I murmur. I'm going to help you. Enzo was right. I should never have left her here. I thought she was stronger than me, but I was wrong. And now, anything that happens to her is on my conscience. I hope she's okay. I'm going to get her out of here. I dig the key to the attic door out of my purse. I fit the key into the lock and let the door swing open. Chapter 59. Nina.
Oh God, I whisper.
The light is on in the attic, like I thought. Those two light bulbs are flickering on the ceiling. The bulbs need to be changed, but there's enough light to see Andy. What used to be Andy, that is. For a solid 60 seconds, all I can do is stare. Then I lean forward and retch. Good thing I was too nervous to eat any breakfast this morning. Hello, Nina. I nearly have a heart attack at the sound of the voice coming from behind me. I was so sickened by the sight in front of me, I didn't even hear the footsteps on the stairs to the attic. I whirl around, and there she is, Millie, holding up a bottle of pepper spray pointed at my face. Millie, I gasp. Her hands are shaking, and her face is very pale. It's like looking into a mirror, but her eyes are filled with fire. Put the pepper spray down, I say, as calmly as I can. She doesn't comply. I'm not going to hurt you, I promise. I glance over at the body on the floor, then back at Millie. How long has he been here?
5 days? Her voice has a blank quality. 6? I've lost count.
He's dead. I say it as a statement, but it comes out more like a question. How long has he been dead? Millie keeps the pepper spray trained on me, and I'm scared to make any quick movements. I know what this girl is capable of.
Do you think he's definitely dead?
She asks.
I can check, if you want. She hesitates, then nods. I make slow movements because I don't want to get sprayed. I know all too well what it's like to get doused with pepper spray. I bend down beside my husband's body on the floor. He does not look alive. His eyes are cracked open, his cheeks are sunken, and his lips are parted. His chest isn't moving. But the worst part is all the dried blood around his mouth and on his white shirt. His lips are parted, and several of his teeth are gone. I suppress the urge to gag. Even so, when I reach out to check his pulse on his neck, I expect him to grab my wrist. But he doesn't. He is completely still. When I press on his pulse, I feel nothing. He's gone, I say. Millie stares at me a moment, then lowers the pepper spray. She sinks onto the cot and buries her face in her hands. It's like she's just realized the enormity of what's happened, what she's done. Oh, God. Oh, no. Millie. You know what this means. She lifts her bloodshot eyes to look at me. The rage is gone, and all that's left is fear.
That's it. I'm going back to prison for the rest of my life.
Tears run down her cheeks, and her shoulders shake silently. It's the same way Cece cries when she doesn't want anyone to know. Millie looks painfully young all of a sudden. She's just a girl. And that's when I make up my mind. I sit beside her on the cot and put my arm gingerly around her shoulders. No, you're not going to prison.
What are you talking about, Nina?
She raises her tear-streaked face.
I killed him. I let him die locked in this room for a week. How does that not mean I'm going to jail?
Because, I say, you weren't even here. She wipes her eyes with the back of her hand.
What are you talking about?
My darling Cece, please forgive me for what I'm about to do. You're going to leave here. I'll tell the police I was here all week. I'll say I gave you the week off.
But
it's the only way, I say sharply. I have a chance. You don't. I've already been hospitalized for mental health issues. Worst comes to worst. I take a deep breath. I'll go back to the psychiatric hospital. Millie frowns, her nose pink.
You were the one who left me the pepper spray, weren't you?
I nod.
You were hoping I would kill him.
I nod again.
So why didn't you just kill him yourself?
I wish there was an easy answer to that question. I was worried about getting caught. I was worried about going to jail. I was worried about what my daughter would do without me. But what it really comes down to is that I just couldn't. I didn't have it in me to take his life. And I did something terrible. I tried to trick Millie into killing him. Which she did. And now she could spend the rest of her life paying for it if I don't do something to help her. Please get out while you can, Millie. Tears prick at my eyes. Go. Before I change my mind. She doesn't have to be told again. She scrambles to her feet and hurries out of the room. Her footsteps disappear down the stairs, and then the front door slams shut, leaving me alone in the house. Just me and Andy, who is staring up at the ceiling with his dead eyes. It's over. It's really over. And there's only one thing left to do. I pick up my phone and call the police. Chapter 60. Nina. If I leave this house, it will be in handcuffs. I can't see any other way around it. I remain on my leather sofa, clutching my knees, wondering if it will be the last time I sit here, while I wait for the detective to come back downstairs. My purse is sitting on the coffee table, and I grab it impulsively. I probably should just be sitting here quietly
like a good little murder suspect, but I can't help it. I pull out my phone and bring up my list of recent calls. I select the first number on the list.
Nina, what is going on?
Enzo's voice is filled with concern.
What is happening over there?
The police are still here. I choke out.
It doesn't look good. For me. They think...
I don't want to say the words out loud. They think I killed Andy. And I didn't kill him outright. He died of dehydration. But they think I am responsible. I could end this. I could tell them about Millie. But I won't.
I'll testify for you,
he says.
What he did to you. I saw you locked up there.
He means it. He'll do anything he can to help me. But how meaningful will testimony be from a man who will almost certainly be painted as my secret lover? And I can't even deny it. I did sleep with Enzo.
Is Cece okay?
I ask.
She's fine.
I close my eyes, trying to steady my breathing.
Is she watching TV?
TV?
No. I teach her Italian. She is a natural.
Despite everything, I laugh, although it's a weak sound.
Can I speak to her?
There's a pause, and Cece comes on the other line.
Ciao, mamma.
I swallow.
Hello, sweetheart. How are you?
Bene. When are you coming to pick me up?
Soon,
I lie.
Just keep working on your Italian, and I'll be there as soon as I can.
I take a breath.
I love you.
I love you too, Mom.
Detective Connors is descending the stairs, his footsteps like gunshots. I shove my phone back into my purse and drop it back down on the coffee table. Apparently, he's taken a closer look at Andy's body, and I'm sure he has a whole new set of questions. I can see it all over his face as he sits down again across from me.
So, he says, do you know anything about the bruising on your husband's body?
Bruising? I ask, genuinely confused. I know about the missing teeth, but I didn't press Millie for further details about what happened in that attic room.
There are deep purple bruises all over his lower belly, Connor says, and all over his genitals. They're almost black.
Oh.
How do you think they got there?
I raise my eyebrows.
Do you think I beat him up?
The idea is laughable. Andy was taller than me by quite a bit, and his body was solid muscle. Mine is not.
I have no idea what happened up there.
His eyes meet mine, and I try not to look away.
Your story is that your husband must have gotten locked in the attic accidentally, and you somehow didn't realize he was gone. Is that right?
I thought he was on a business trip, I say. He usually takes a taxi to the airport.
And there were no text messages or calls between the two of you during this time, but that didn't concern you,
he points out.
Furthermore, in talking to his parents, it sounds like he had asked you to move out last week.
I can't deny that part.
Yes, that's right. That's why we didn't talk. And what about this Wilhelmina Calloway?
He pulls a small pad of paper out of his pocket and consults his note.
She was working for you, wasn't she?
I lift a shoulder. I gave her the week off. My daughter was off at camp, so I felt like we didn't need her. I haven't seen her all week. I'm sure they're going to try to contact Millie, but I'm trying to take her off the suspect list as best I can. It's the least I can do after what I did to her.
So you're telling me that a grown man managed to get himself locked in a room in the attic without his phone, even though the room only locks from the outside?
Connor's eyebrows inch up to his hairline.
And while he was in the room, he randomly decided to pull out four of his teeth?
When he says it that way.
Mrs. Winchester,
the detective says,
do you really believe your husband is the sort of man who would do something like that?
I lean back against the sofa, trying not to let on how much my body is trembling.
Maybe.
You didn't know him.
Actually, he says, that isn't entirely true.
I look up sharply. Excuse me? Oh, God. This just gets worse and worse. The detective